Blog Talk Radio.
Borrow money from pessimists. They don't expect it back.
You're listening to the Goldstein on Geld Show with financial expert Douglas Goldstein. This show is designed to give general information related to investing and finance. Neither Doug Goldstein, his guests, nor the radio station are rendering legal, tax, insurance, or specific financial advice. If you require such advice, contact a competent professional advisor. Before making any investment decisions based on what you heard during the show, please review the complete disclaimer located at www.goldsteinongeld.com. And now, here's your host, Money Maven, Doug Goldstein.
Good Money Monday. I'm Doug Goldstein, your host of the Goldstein on Geld Show. I'm very happy to have you here today. In fact, I'm very happy to let you know a little bit what's going on. I got an email last week or 2 weeks ago from Malta, and they said that they had seen some of the work I had done, and they wanted to invite me to be a keynote speaker at a big financial conference in Malta. So for the first time ever, Doug Goldstein is flying to Malta. It'll be in May when the conference starts. I spoke with them for quite a while about what topic they want to cover. Now, it's interesting because the audience there is a rather eclectic group of people from the insurance, the financial, and the business world, and they're all coming together to network and to learn some ideas. So speaking to this audience, quite frankly, is a little bit more of a challenge than some of the other lectures that I give. As a financial advisor, I often speak to people about financial planning and how to invest in stocks or bonds or mutual funds or working with money managers. Those are kind of the standard courses that I'll teach. But here they wanted something that's going to make everyone happy. So I suggested that I could talk a little bit about business planning and business management and really effectively running yourself when you are an executive or running a practice or running a business. And this idea really, really spoke to them because certain areas that I've done research on, and in fact, even related to the book Rich as a King, which I wrote with Susan Polgar, the world chess champion, we spoke a lot about these concepts. So I'm still working on the speech. It's not for a couple of months, but I'm thinking now the topics will be about time management and about habit forming, which if you've been listening to the show recently, you know those are two very hot topics for me. And I think that in any business, really, whatever you're in, if you can manage your priorities better, I always say that because although we talk about time management is a bit of a misnomer because you can't manage time. You and I all have 24 hours a day and that's it. But you can manage your priorities and you can manage what you're going to do in that time. So as a good takeaway just for this opening of the show, maybe think a little bit about when you're handling your own business or your own finances, where should you be prioritizing? How much time should you be spending on what part? And I'll give you a hint in just a minute. No matter how much planning or praying you do, at the end of the day, you've got to make a decision about handling your money. Best-selling author Dave Ramsey is great at offering practical advice, and we've got some of Dave's guidance right now, right here on the Goldstein on Geld Show.
This is Dave Ramsey, and this is your daily money makeover. Lane's driving a beater car, and it needs a new transmission. Should he fix it up and keep it running, or get a different car with cash? I'll have the answer next.
Save money on your grocery budget with emails from MealtimeMakeover.com. Let emails do the menu and grocery planning work for you. At only $5 a month, it's a no-brainer. Sign up today at MealtimeMakeover.com. That's MealtimeMakeover.com.
Lane in California, at what point do you quit fixing the beater and get something different? I have a car that needs a transmission as well as some other work. I can buy a newer but still experienced car for the same or less than the repairs. Is that a good idea? I'll be saving up and paying cash either way. Good. Move on up in car because your beater died. You know, one of the things about beaters is they're disposable cars. A hoopty is disposable. And so when you're driving a $1,000 car and a $2,500 transmission goes out, that car goes, it's done. It goes to the junkyard and you get $500 out of it. It's just, you know, it's a throwaway. That's what it's for. But now, if you're driving a $5,000 car, you got to stop and think about whether you put a transmission in that, whether or not that's going to make sense. Overall, mathematically, until you get down to that level of car, on repairs of cars, you know, really, you can mathematically fix a car forever, almost, until you get down to $1,000 value. You can mathematically fix a car cheaper than you can buy another one.
For more straight talk on life and money, go to DaveRamsey.com.
I started off by talking for a minute now about how you could prioritize the the way you spend your time. And in handling personal finance, actually, it goes back to something that Susan Polgar had told me when we were researching our book. I asked her, is it more important to the chess player to study strategies or to study tactics? And she told me that even though at the very high levels of chess, being an excellent strategist as well as an excellent tactician is critical if you want to become a world champion, she said for people who are at the beginning level or even at the medium level, they should focus mostly on tactics, because if you know the right moves to make in any short term, you'll be able to improve your situation enough to win most of the games you're going to play. And it turns out the same thing applies in personal finance. Although I'm sure you've heard me talk about the importance of financial planning and developing a long-term system for managing your money, the people who do just fine are the people who have good financial tactics at hand. For example, they carefully budget, they diversify, they know how to make a move, how to buy and sell, and when to do that. They're dealing with the smaller issues, which, although I would absolutely say you want to do that in context of a big picture strategy, if you had to choose one thing to get good at, I would say make sure you're good at financial tactics, which, by the way, is one of the reasons I try to talk a lot about that and I write a lot about that. And certainly all of the books I've written have been more tactical, helping people know how to make the decisions that are right in front of them than necessarily whole books about financial planning. So again, I'm not saying you shouldn't do a financial plan. I think everyone should. But at the very least, make sure that you've got your tactics in place. All right, listen, stay tuned. In just a minute, I'll be bringing on Dr. Davila Garcia from Howard University. She's actually in a medical school there. But she'll be talking to us about how the brain deals with money issues. And in the second half of the show, I got a fantastic guest, Kurt Cobb. He is an expert in the energy industry as well as environment, and he'll be talking to us about what it means to have such low oil or relatively low oil prices. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Goldstein on Gelt show, www.goldsteinongelt.com.
Okay, we are back. I'm very happy to have on the Goldstein on Gelt show Dr. Davila Garcia, who's an associate professor at Howard University's College of Medicine. And one of the things that she talks about is emotions and neuroscience, which, as it turns out, have a huge impact on people investing. Real pleasure to have you.
Thank you, Doug. Pleasure to be here.
Before I go into the specific questions, can you give us a brief overview of the type of work you're doing?
So I'm a neuroscientist, so as all neuroscientists, I'm extremely curious as to how the brain works. And so one of the things that I've been studying or looking at is how we make decisions. I'm more focused on drug abuse and how we actually end up becoming abusers of certain things like alcohol and tobacco and cocaine and things like that. But this also ties in very much with how we make decisions about things during our daily life. So one of them, of course, is investing and managing money.
Is there any overlap between why people abuse drugs and alcohol and why they become addicted to investing or trading or gambling?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The reason that they become addicted very much emotionally invested in doing those behaviors is because we have areas in the brain that are going to store things that are good for us or that make us happy, and that's called the reward center of the brain. And when we do things or we experience things that are negative for us, we actually store things in an aversive area of the brain, and they're interconnected. And sometimes, most of the times, these connections are actually quite passive, and they're very much working in tandem, and they allow us to do things that are normal. But sometimes we actually increase the activity of some of these areas. So when you gamble or when you take drugs, you end up exciting or overexciting this reward center of the brain, and then the aversive side basically becomes tuned down or not active. And so you end up with a dysregulation or a lack of control over what you're doing and over your actions. And that's why all of these things come together is you have an overexcitation of the reward center and a downregulation of the center that says, stop, don't go, don't do that, that's bad, that's not right, you know, stop
it. Are these actual places in your mind, or is this sort of a metaphor to help people like me understand?
Oh, no. There's actually places in the brain that you can actually see. If you actually put wires on people, electrodes on people's brain, you can actually see areas of the brain firing when you're getting, when you have a positive experience, or when you see something in a picture that is a positive thing for you. And on the other side, if you actually experience or see things that are negative or have a negative connotation on your brain, you're other areas of the brain will actually light up. So there's a lot of, this is all hardwired emotional brain. There's no, it's not ethereal, it's not floating in the air, it's all hardwired in your brain.
So we have all these emotions that drive us, and certainly in the world of finance, so much of what I do in my day job as a financial advisor is I explain to people what, it's not that it's obvious, but there are principles that I think make sense to everyone when you describe it academically. For example, don't spend more than you earn, right? This is something you can calculate. You can see how much you earn and how much you spend. And the concept is not a high-level concept. And yet, that's one of the most destructive areas that people have in their finance, which is they spend more than they earn. And there's always some emotional response. How come it is that people can't control their emotions so that they could make more logical decisions, especially in areas that are so easy to measure, like money?
Well, one of the problems is actually lack of education or lack of positive experiences in that regard. So you have to understand that people have a very positive connotation to money. So they think that investing and doing the kind of financial things that you normally do when you are investing is going to always be a risk, and therefore it doesn't matter whether they're taking, they're making a decision to buy something or not. The problem comes when you don't have enough information in your brain, when you don't have enough learned experiences that teach you that you need to control the buying of things that you don't know anything about, as opposed to, to buying things that you know a little bit more about and you can actually control. So if you actually have more knowledge and if you have more information stored in your brain, you can actually control your emotions a lot more and you can actually not take risks and purchase things that you cannot afford.
I see. We're talking with Dr. Davila Garcia at Howard University. She studies neuroscience, studies the brain, but she particularly studies, one area is how people make some very poor decisions or emotional decisions, specifically in the world of finance. So let me drill in on something you said. You said that people may not have enough experiences. They don't have the education and they need more knowledge in order to perhaps make smarter decisions. But it seems to me I know people who for decades have been shopping too much and spending too much and they live in debt for way too long. So it would seem to me not only do they have the numbers on their bank statements always being in the negative, but they must know what it feels like to have to dig themselves out of debt every morning. How come they can't translate that, or what could we tell them to help them translate that into an experience that they themselves could learn from their own mistakes?
So the connotation of what you actually said was a negative connotation. So you say, do not spend more than what you have, or do not spend more than what you earn. And the problem is that there's a negative connotation to that. So they already have blocked their brains, and they're not listening to you anymore.
Oh, no.
And so the thing to do is actually to take a step back and say, okay, what is it that you want to accomplish? So if what you want to accomplish is to buy a house, then what you need to do is you need to invest X amount of money every month for the next X number of months so that you can actually, in 2 years or 3 years, you can actually see that money in the bank account and then you can purchase a house. That to them sounds like, okay, that's a goal that I'm going to be looking forward, as opposed to I'm not ever going to have enough money to spend because you're telling me that I'm never going to have enough money to buy the things that I want to buy. You see what I mean?
I hear it's, you. Put a positive
so
spin on it.
If you put a positive spin on things, because all Western societies have actually put so much emphasis on having goods and having material goods, and that our pride, our entire being is always, you know, just trying to become this gatherer of things, as opposed to trying to figure out what exactly it is that you need. You know, you need a shelter, you need food, you need to have clothes. And many societies, in Sweden and places like that, they're actually thinking the reverse. It's try to minimize what you need and see what you really can actually live with. And so if you have a positive spin on things, I think people are actually always more accepting, and they can actually think in a more positive way. And their decisions will be a lot better and more towards the goal that they want to achieve.
So this might be a bit of a radical question, but is there some kind of pill that you can give someone to make him think logically? the same way you might help someone who has an addiction. You say, listen, let me just, you know, take this drug to control some, you know, path in your brain that's shooting off, making you make poor decisions. And instead, it'll just let you run a calculation and positively think the right decision.
Yes, there's drugs, but more importantly, there's actually a lot of different behavioral modifications that one can do in order to be able to make better decisions. Control yourself. One of the things that I always tell everybody is we have been taught to get reward immediately. And so if you delay those rewards, if you learn to delay the rewards, you can actually make better decisions at a later time. So for example, if you're going to go shopping, you know, keep the credit cards at home. And then if you find something that you really like, you can always come back for it. But if you actually take your credit cards and each, you know, every single credit card is in your wallet, then it's a lot easier for you to spend a lot more money than you even expected or that you were, you know, budgeting for. Delay reward, and delaying reward is always a lot better, and it makes it for better financial decisions.
So if you can teach someone to do that or develop the habit of doing that, then it might make you, in the long run, a better financial decision maker?
Absolutely.
Are there any other traits you can tell us in the last minute of people who you've seen who are financially successful that we could copy some of their patterns?
So other than being learned, being educated, delaying reward, making sure that you put the money where you know it's going to be a positive reward. So we take a lot of risks sometimes, and that's okay. But sometimes we take risks that are not going to take us to the right places. So, you know, the more knowledge you get, the less the risk involved.
Got it. Okay. That sounds like two good takeaways. One is increase your knowledge, and two is learn to delay rewards by getting in the habit of doing that, and hopefully also teaching your children as well. We've been talking to Dr. Davila Garcia from Howard University. In the last few seconds, can you just tell us, how can people learn more about you and follow your work?
So I'm a professor at Howard University Medical School, so you can find me there. I have LinkedIn and Facebook, and all of my information is out in there in the web, so you
Great.
Can find me.
Okay, and we'll put links to that at the show notes of the Goldstein on Gelt of today's show at goldsteinongelt.com. Thanks again very much for your time.
You're welcome. Thanks, Doc.
Beginning of the show, I was mentioning, and in fact, I was really sort of fishing for ideas that you might have about what I could talk about in Malta when I go at the end of May to speak at a financial conference there. The ideas that I'm really
planning to focus on are how business executives and people in business can deal with time management as well as forming good habits. So I spoke before about time management, or what I prefer to refer to as priority management. But now let me just tell you a little bit about some of the habits that I think people should develop. Recently, in fact, a few months ago, I interviewed a fellow named James Clear right here on the Goldstein on Gelt show. By the way, if you missed that, and in fact, if you miss any interview, all of our interviews are made into videos. Just go to YouTube and look up the name of the guest and Goldstein on Gelt. So in this case, you could look up James Clear and Goldstein on Gelt, and you can listen to that fantastic interview. So talking to James, I was kind of inspired to focus more on habit development. And I think that one of the things we all have to realize is that most of what you do during the day is habitual, the way you handle your morning routine, the things you do at work, the things you do at night, what your lunch looks like. These are habits that we all develop over time. Unfortunately, we often develop the habits rather haphazardly. Whatever comes, comes, and that's what we end up doing. So what I'd like to encourage everyone to do is think about a habit you want to develop, whether you want to read more or exercise more or diet more, and try and break it into the smallest possible component to start. The fellow who really talks a lot about this is a professor at Stanford University named B.J. Foggs, and he's got this concept of tiny habits. And his theory is that if you start with a very, 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 very small habit, you can build it up. In fact, he encourages people who, let's say, want to start flossing their teeth, because we all know it's probably a good idea. He says, don't commit to flossing your teeth every night. He says, just say that every time you put your toothbrush back in the cup, you will floss one tooth. Now, don't think this is crazy. Ultimately, we are going to try to be good flossers and floss all of them. But when people jump in to try and change their habits too dramatically, it just doesn't work. They may do it for a day or two or three, then they quit. But if you start the opposite and start with something very small and build up, that's a great way to become habitually attuned to doing something, and it becomes part of who you are. I started doing this a few months ago, and I have to tell you, I've picked up a number of good habits that I specifically wanted to do, and it's been very successful. You can check that out at tinyhabits.com if this is something that's interesting to you. Okay, stay tuned. In part two of the show, I'm going to be bringing on Kurt Cobb, a fantastic speaker and writer and expert in the energy field. And one of the topics that comes up in my office all the time when people are talking about how they should handle their own investing, because it obviously is part of what I do, is I help people to design portfolios. They all say, listen, the price of oil has come down so much. What should I do, and how is that going to affect the economy? So in part two, we'll be talking to Kurt Cobb. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Money Maven Doug Goldstein on the Goldstein on Gelt show. Stay tuned for the second half of the show right after the break.